Crosby, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hey, it's Tom Matthews from Return of the Living Dead and Friday the 13th, Part 6, to name a few, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? I'm Mean Joe Grizzly, and when I'm not paranoid about my parents' homicidal intentions, trying to find a connection between my father's murder and the cult that he took down, or being chosen as the host for an alien scarab, I'm at the Grizzly Cave, watching movies, reading comics, listening to metal, and of course, crushing beers. And on today's episode, I'm going to be bringing y'all a few reviews. The first two are two horror films that were previously released earlier this year, but only had a limited run in theaters. And the first of those is Cobweb, released July 21st of this year, and it was directed by Samuel Bowden and produced by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. The second is Malum, a remake to a fan-praised independent horror film known as Last Shift, directed by the same director, Anthony DeBlasi. And then I will be talking about the latest installment of the DCEU, DC's Blue Beetle. But before we get started, I want y'all to take a second and follow the show on all social media platforms, as well as joining my Mean Militia on the show's official Facebook group by clicking the links down in the episode description. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the show on whatever platform y'all listen on. By doing this, y'all support the show and help me continue to talk to y'all about all forms of badassery. So were these two horror releases suited for their limited theater run? Or did they deserve a wider release? Is Blue Beetle just another lackluster or bad installment of the DCEU? Or does it join the handful of great DCEU films? Let's find out, starting with Cobweb. This is Grizzly Grade Reviews. When young Peter begins hearing voices coming from his bedroom walls, the voice befriends Peter and then begins to tell him that his parents are not what they seem. And that's all I'm really going to say about that, because this movie is one that needs to be watched. This movie, I'm calling it right now. I've heard other people say that, other creators say it. I'm going to have to agree with them. This movie is this year's Barbarian, and it's a damn shame it didn't get a wide release. So, just like I stated before, this awkward kid named Peter, who's not only does he get bullied at school, but his parents are extremely overbearing and even at times pretty abusive. So he starts hearing this voice coming from the walls of his bedroom, and it's telling him that his parents are evil and they're going to hurt him. So this leads to the boy trying to figure out the truth, and it leads him down a horrifying road with so many twists and turns and a third act that is batshit crazy. So let's get to the positives. So starting out, this movie is set during Halloween, and it just adds to the creepy atmosphere. In fact, the family actually has a pumpkin patch in their backyard, which I thought was a pretty nice touch. Just this whole movie just screams, "Watch me during the spooky season," and I love that. It actually might get added to my regular rotation for all of my October screenings. This movie gives us an experience that is so damn unpredictable that it's just so welcoming. It's very, very hard to keep me guessing throughout a movie, which is why I called this movie this year's Barbarian, because I had no fucking idea where they were going with Barbarian. Every time I thought I had it figured out, they would switch it up on me. And they do the same thing in Cobweb. They do maybe not quite as good of a job as they did in Barbarian, but pretty damn close. They have this great slow building tension and uneasiness throughout the movie, and unlike most of these larger and more studio produced horror films, they really rely on a lot of jump scares and massive amounts of gore to get their tension up or to get their scares across. And I don't feel like this movie relies on that. I feel like it's steady building tension throughout the movie, and honestly, it makes you uncomfortable, because the whole time I was watching this movie, I was really worried about the little boy in the movie. Anthony Starr and Lizzie Kaplan, I mean, both of them are, they might not be superstar household names. Anthony Starr certainly is getting to that level. Both of them are phenomenal actors. I've always liked both of them. And their performance as Peter's parents are so damn creepy and unnerving. Like, every time they're on screen interacting with Peter, I actually get pretty uncomfortable and pretty damn nervous for that kid, because you literally cannot tell what their intentions are. They'll have you generally concerned for the kid's safety, and you can actually understand why he's willing to listen to this voice that's within his walls, because he's so like closed in from all sides and doesn't know who to trust, doesn't know who's gonna hurt him, who's not gonna hurt him. It's kind of sad to see, and I think Anthony Starr and Lizzie Kaplan do a good job of conveying that claustrophobia that child is feeling, because they are the driving force behind that. The acts of abuse, the violence and the gore, they're all pretty earned, and at times they're pretty shocking, and that's always welcomed to me, because we live in a world where everything's so predictable for horror fans. Now, moving on to the negatives, although I don't think that it's as bad as the rest of the horror community seems to be saying, but I do think the very end was weak, but even more so, it just felt rushed. The third act is batshit, and I loved it, but the very end just seems like it was rushed, and it just kind of ends. That's like the biggest negative that I can actually point dead at and say, this is the problem with this movie, is the very end. And there was also a subplot, and I'm just going to be honest with you guys, it probably got wrapped up. I don't remember how this one particular subplot got wrapped up. Not that I'm aware of. I just remember them talking about it a few times, and then nothing ever really coming out of it. And then we just ended the movie. So, does this movie, did it deserve to get zero marketing? Because the way I found out about this movie was I seen a trailer on Facebook, and someone that I follow shared this trailer. Lionsgate, I believe, is the studio that made this movie. I'm trying to figure out why these big studios are just shitting the bed when it comes to marketing. I do not understand it. If I'm being honest with you, it kind of pisses me off, because some of the movies that are actually pretty good are suffering from this. These big studios need to get their shit together. It's just not working. Like, and I can literally do a 30-minute rant on how these studios are, their marketing is so shitty, either it reveals too much or it doesn't, there is no marketing at all. And I just think that that's something that really needs to change. Fire everybody in marketing and hire somebody new, because it's just bullshit. It's a damn shame that this movie didn't get a wide release, guys, because we've had some decent horror films this year, but we haven't had any other than your big names like Evil Dead and Scream, to me, Evil Dead was probably the biggest horror movie of this year, and I really enjoyed it, and then Talk to Me was released. Well, I can tell you right now that I, in my opinion, Cobweb deserved a wide release, and Cobweb would have been, it's still easily in my top five as of right now, unless the rest of the year just turns into this phenomenal year of horror, but I just don't see that happening. It's gonna be damn near impossible to top last year. Last year was the best year in horror in probably two decades. There were so many good movies that came out last year. But we still got pretty much a whole half a year left. But nevertheless, it was an injustice that this movie did not get a wide release. And I get why it wouldn't have done well, because it would have released in all theaters the same time that Oppenheimer and Barbie was released, which is why I asked this next question. Why the fuck don't these studios release movies like this, especially in October? There is this crazy drought of horror films in October. Like, yeah, sure, we've had Halloween, the David Gordon Green Halloweens have been releasing every year, but prior to that we had Saw, stuff like that. But you literally have like two horror releases in October in theaters, and I don't really understand it. I don't understand why. Like, this year we have Five Nights at Freddy's, which I'm gonna go see, and we have The Exorcist Believer. Why could Cobweb not have split that weekend? I'm gonna be perfectly honest with you, I don't understand why these studios don't release in October. Maybe it's scheduling. I don't know. I don't know how any of that works, and I'm not going to pretend like I do. But this would have been a great October or Halloween moviegoer experience. And I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't have enough faith in it to give it a wide release or release it in October. But Cobweb manages to keep the audience guessing at every turn, and it does this by delivering a unique, well-written story that is manifested to the screen by the creepy atmosphere, the unnerving performances by Lizzie Kaplan and Anthony Starr, the earned acts of violence and scares, and it perfectly builds tension that just keeps you on the edge of your seat throughout the entire movie. So with that being said, Cobweb gets a 4.25 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. Now, let's move on to the remake of a cult horror classic, Malum. Let's see if that deserved its limited release. When rookie officer Jessica takes the last shift at a decommissioned police station in order to uncover the mystery of her father's suicide and murderous rampage, she soon discovers that she's in over her head, and the descent into madness begins. So this movie is a remake of a pretty recent cult classic known as Last Shift, and the same director returns to helm the remake, and this time puts even more focus on the cult known as the Temple of the Low God. But does it surpass or even rival the original? Let's get to the positives. So, I think they successfully recapture and even surpass the creepiness and unsettling atmosphere of the original. The tight hallways, the wide open dark rooms, and the small dark holding cells just make you feel claustrophobic and trapped. All of the cult footage and the interview footage with the cult leader, John Malum, I believe was his name, is great. All that stuff's really cool. It's a really big step up from the original, and making the main focus even more on the cult was a great choice. And for me, that was the best part of the original. For them to build upon this cult that we only really got a little glimpse here and there about them, it was pretty good. The gore and the violence at times, it just comes out of nowhere because there's a lot of jumps. It's not necessarily jump scares. There's a lot of flashing stuff that happens, like flashy stuff, like they'll turn a corner and there's a creature, or they'll turn a corner and there's a body, or, you know, there's scenes where she's trying to help somebody and something nuts will happen and that person will die in like a super gruesome way, and it surprises you. It's very effective, and he's very effective at delivering those scares, and the creature effects were pretty damn solid. Everything in the special effects in the scares department completely works. Now, moving on to the negatives, although I think that the central villain of John Malum is very well written, and the cultists are creepy as hell in all the footage we see them in, the main character of Jessica she's just a pretty dumb character. And yeah, I know that's kind of harsh, but she's not smart at all. She's just not well written. She continuously runs forward into these psychological mind games and falls victim to them every single time. And I commend, like, you know, bravery, like moving in to the danger to do whatever. Yeah, this bitch is stupid. I'm just gonna throw it out there. She's not smart. Every time she does charge forward and make rash decisions, she pays the consequences. And without spoiling anything, she pays very, very heavily a couple of times. One time in particular, she pays very heavily. So she just... She just falls victim to the tricks of this cult every single time. I also don't think that the person that is portraying Jessica, oddly enough, her name is Jessica as well, Jessica Sula, or the character who plays her mother, which are really the only two characters in the movie other than a couple of cops here and there. Candace Cope plays her mother, Diana. I don't think either one of them were particularly good actresses. They both gave these, I'm not going to say they're phoned in, very stiff performances, which that's par for the course. But I felt like Julianne Harvey, I thought she did phenomenal in the first one. She was really good. Was she win an Oscar for it? Hell no. But she did a good job. She was an unknown then, and she cut her teeth on Last Shift, and I thought it was good. And I think that the change to the ending in the hopes of making this remake to be a bigger, more grander, like, conclusion was a bad decision. And I do like and appreciate the increase in all of the good things that they did, but I think that original ending was just so damn bleak and so good. I mean, not to say that this one isn't bleak, but that original one was like jaw-dropping. Like oh shit. Like, it was crazy. And this one is a little too on the nose and changes the ending drastically. So overall, I mean, Malum was a good remake with more up-to-date effects, more use of the cult and its members, and a bigger set, but it does have some issues in the writing, acting, and unnecessary changes to a pretty good ending. But I still enjoyed it. I think it's still an enjoyable watch with some very creepy scenes, some good gore, and some pretty creepy villains and creatures. Do I think it deserved a wide release? No. I do think this one deserved a limited release and maybe even a straight-to-VOD or Blu release. That's no knock on the that's no knock on the director and his vision, or people who are super big fans of this movie. I just feel like that he remade a movie and made changes to it that were unnecessary. I do appreciate the increased production value and all that, but if it's not broken, don't fix it. So with that being said, Malum gets a 3.5 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. Now on to probably the biggest surprise of this summer, and that is Blue Beetle. When Jaime Reyes is chosen by the Scarab, it's up to him to stop Cord Industries from creating and flooding the world with weapons of mass destruction. And I went into this movie with zero expectations, and I suspected that it was going to be a lot like a generic superhero movie, like Shazam Fury of the Gods, or, you know, like a Shang-Chi at the best, maybe even like an Ant-Man. But this movie was so damn good, and it manages to somehow be better than the last few installments of the MCU and the DCEU. Not saying it's better than all of them, but it's definitely the best DCEU film I've seen in a while. And it just gives me classic Spider-Man vibes. But let's move on to the positives. The CGI and the special effects look amazing, and thank God, because after that CGI disaster that's The Flash, DC needed a W in that department. And quite frankly, the CG and the special effects in Blue Beetle are better than most of the CGI and special effects that Marvel's been putting out as well. So shame on Marvel and shame on Warner Brothers for putting out shitty products. This movie has so much heart and soul, and that's so refreshing to this genre that has become this rinse and repeat genre. The family aspect especially hits home so well, and it feels so organic, like nothing feels forced at all. The movie is also very, very well written, and nothing feels out of place, forced, or inorganic in the least bit. The performances by majority of the cast were great, with the standouts being George Lopez. He is freaking hilarious in this. He does a great job of playing that crazy uncle type guy that's really smart but just thinks the government's out to get him. And my boy who plays Jaime Reyes, the kid from Cobra Kai, and I'm gonna butcher his name, Zolo Mordiduenia. That's the best I can do, buddy. Sorry. Talk about perfect casting. I can never see anybody as Jaime Reyes now. He was the only choice for this role. I'm so glad that they chose him because he's pretty good in Cobra Kai, and I felt like he would do a great job of playing Jaime Reyes. Once they announced this, I was like, he's got this. This is going to be good. As long as they don't give him like a shitty script, he's going to be great. The mythos of the old original Blue Beetle and this version are very well respected in this movie. For those of you that don't know the character, the original Blue Beetle was named Ted Kord. And he was kind of like a detective type character with gadgets and stuff, kind of like Batman. Nowhere near as the good fighter and detective as Batman is, but nevertheless, he was that type of character. And he was big in the golden age of comics. And they talk about him a lot in this movie, and that was pretty surprising. I didn't see that coming. This version, the Jaime Reyes version of Blue Beetle, they nailed this. It's not word for word from the comics, but the way they did it was so respectful to the source material. A+. They did a good job. And I love how unapologetically Hispanic it is. And I believe even the director is Hispanic, so you can definitely tell in the movie because it's so, like, Hispanic culture is so ingrained in in this movie, and I love that because that's Jaime Reyes. He's Hispanic, and that needed to be done from a Hispanic director, kind of like how Black Panther needed to be done by Ryan Coogler. That's just the only way it would work. The fights are great, and they're intense too. The suit for Blue Beetle, like I said before, the makeup and the special effects and the CGI was great. Blue Beetle's suit looks spot on from the comics. It's ripped straight off the pages, and that was so good. And the Carapax suit was great too. Carapax, he's not necessarily the best villain ever, but he was a menacing villain. He had a "I'm gonna kill this kid and I don't give a shit" type like attitude to him that felt genuine. It didn't feel like he was, you know, mustache twirling villain that's "I'm gonna get these kids." He wasn't like that guy. He was generally scary. Like he fit the part of ex military, seen some combat, had some shit happen to him. Guy doesn't give a damn if it's a kid or not, he's gonna kill him. And I thought that both of the suits and their acting as in those suits was perfect. This movie is also funny as hell. It's so damn funny, and it's very good wholesome humor too. And again, this isn't like super bad type humor or anything, but it's good family humor, and it's very down to earth and just funny, because if you have a big family like I do, then you can definitely relate. So I thought that was good. Probably the biggest surprise about this movie was the damn music, man. They got this 80s/90s synthwave soundtrack with this, and it is great. I really hope that it gets released, because I'm probably gonna buy it. It doesn't feel like a superhero movie. I mean, it does, but it feels a lot like an 80s sci-fi movie, like a Fly of the Navigator or something like that. It just has that feel to it, and that really caught me off guard, because normally it's just, you know, generic superhero music. Nah, man, they had some good synth in this stuff. I love synth wave music, and they did a great job in this. And finally, the final act is probably the best final act I've seen in a superhero film in a very long time. It felt complete. It had a complete resolution. I thought that the final battle was very intense and very well done. There was no slip in the effects. It was pretty intense. Again, Carapax, pretty badass villain at the end when he's got his suit on and stuff. And probably one of the best things about this that's a positive is it's almost completely disconnected from the rest of the DCEU. So James Gunn can roll this over into his new DCEU. And I kind of hope he does, man. I actually really hope he does, because he'd kind of be stupid if he didn't. Because this movie is so divorced from everything else, he can easily do it. He can actually say, Blue Beetle is the start of my universe. Superman Legacy is going to be the official start, but Blue Beetle is like the prequel. And I think that would be a good idea. And it would actually show people that there's some hope for this universe before it even gets started. But on to the negatives. The movie's not perfect. I'm not going to say that this movie's perfect, because it's not. But I just have two negatives for this movie. Susan Sarandon, respect her body of work. She's a great actress. But she completely just phoned it in her performance of this movie. You could tell that she was just getting a paycheck, because she put no effort into this role. She was such a damn robot, and I hated it. So I don't even... She might have been the person pulling the strings in the movie, but the real villain was Carapax. And I think that Carapax was pretty cool. Was he like the best villain ever? No. But Susan Sarandon is the actual big bad of this movie. And the only other complaint I have, it's a little slow in the second act. It kind of drags a little bit in the second act, but not enough for me to give it any kind of, you know, super negative rating for it. guys, I really enjoyed Guardians 3. I enjoyed The Flash despite Ezra Miller and the horrible CGI that it had, and the majority of Quantumania. But this movie, it just has heart and soul and solid writing, and that's been missing from this genre for a very long time. And as of right now, this and Across the Spider-Verse are my favorite superhero movies of this year. This movie just embodies the character of Blue Beetle from the comics perfectly, with its perfect casting of Zoe Meridwina, to the solid family dynamic, to the character's Hispanic heritage, to the perfect suit design. It's just a damn shame it's part of the dying DCEU, because this is what their universe could have been. But with all that being said, Blue Beetle gets a 4.5 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. Please go see this movie, guys. Please. This movie is so good. It's the best live action superhero film of the year for me. It's so damn good. And please watch Cobweb and Milam on VOD. Both of those movies are pretty good too. Watch these movies, guys. Support these films. And with that, we bring another episode to an end. Thank you all so much for your continued support. Without y'all, the show isn't possible. If you like this episode, please consider subscribing to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to click the links in the description below to follow me on all social media platforms. Make sure y'all check out Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. He's the guy who does the music for my intros and outros and throughout the episode. Guy's phenomenal. You can check out his work on Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube, just about anywhere you can listen to music. Guy's incredible. If y'all want anything that sounds great in your videos or just some cool-ass synth wave to listen to, go check out his stuff. As far as what's coming next, September's a big month. There's a lot of stuff releasing that I did not realize was releasing. So don't know where we're going yet. I don't want to make the announcement yet, but we're bringing back a segment of the show that legit we haven't done since last year. And I apologize that we haven't done it since last year, because I rather enjoy doing this segment, but I'm not going to say what it is. I'm just going to let it be a surprise. That should return in some capacity sometime the rest of this year. So stay tuned for that. Make sure you keep your eyes peeled on TikTok. I'm still planning on releasing some content on there as well. Just again, trying to work out all the details of that. Again, guys, thank you all for your support and your patience. I do this because of y'all, because I enjoy talking about this stuff with people. So thank you all for sharing that passion with me, and thank you for being supportive. But until next time, remember, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.